My name is Caleb Brown. I work at the Mustard Seed in Calgary. I'm actually an alumni of Briarcrest, so a few years ago I graduated from Briarcrest. I had my BA in Biblical Studies. Highly recommend if you're interested in coming to school here. Best 4.5 years of my life. I was a pretty new Christian when I came to Briarcrest, and just really grateful for that time that I was shaped and formed as a disciple of Jesus. And yeah, it's just such a beautiful place to grow in your faith and to have a community of believers who want the same thing. And yeah, I just encourage you, if you're thinking about applying or if you're kind of debating, it's a great choice to make. So that's my 10 cents on going to Briarcrest. So yeah, like I said, my name is Caleb. I work at the Mustard Seed. My position at the Mustard Seed is called Community Engagement Coordinator. And so I get to go around Calgary connecting with people in the city, whether that's businesses, organizations, churches, people in the community who are leaders. And we try to figure out ways that we can better help the most vulnerable people that live among us. So if you do not know, the Mustard Seed is an organization that helps people experiencing homelessness and poverty. We're a nonprofit Christian organization, and our goal is to eliminate homelessness and reduce poverty where we serve. And I want you to think for a moment, do you think that's a realistic goal to have? Do you think that we can eliminate homelessness and reduce poverty? Serious question. Don't answer it yet, but just think about that as we talk about these things. I'm just going to briefly define poverty, homelessness, just kind of go over the basics of these things. I think it's really important, especially as Christians, to understand what people are experiencing and just the reality in our own communities, what that looks like. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Mustard Seed, what we do. And then I'm going to talk about our response as Christians. So, what is poverty? Any thoughts? How would you define poverty? Anybody?
Living on less.
Living on less, yeah. Any other thoughts? Not having beneficial things. So, poverty is defined as the lack of adequate means to meet basic needs. So simply put, it means to not have enough. So people who are experiencing poverty, they don't have enough to meet basic needs like shelter, food, clothing, hygiene items, transportation, communication. These are all basic needs. And we might not think of all of the things that we have access to daily as basic needs. But a lot of people who are experiencing poverty, they don't have access to those things. So someone who's experiencing poverty, they might have to choose between shelter and food. Think of a single mother. She has 4 children. They're experiencing poverty, and that month she might have to choose between putting food on the table or paying for rent. And a lot of the clients that we serve at the Mustard Seed, that's their story. And it's really sad, and we try our best to help those people in their need. So, I was going to ask you to guess that number. How many people do you think are experiencing poverty in Calgary? Who wants to give the answer? Anybody?
189,000.
Well done, Jonah. So, 189,000 people. Do you think that's a lot of people? Yes, it is a lot of people. I know Calgary is a big city, around 1.3 million people, but this is still too much. I think we can agree on that. Those of you from Alberta, to give some perspective, this is the population of Red Deer and Airdrie combined. So that's a lot of people. These are, in Calgary, these are our neighbors. These are people that we pass on the street. These are people in our community who don't have enough to meet basic needs. During the pandemic, we think around 77,000 people are experiencing poverty because of the pandemic. So that's an additional 77,000 people. That number is likely a lot higher. So around 270,000 people experiencing poverty. This is just to, again, give some perspective of what this looks like in our own provinces. So these are children experiencing poverty. In BC, 159,570 children. Alberta, 160,000 children. Saskatchewan, 73,000. Manitoba, 88,840. And Ontario, 500,000. That's a lot of children who don't have enough. Whether that be education, shelter, food, clothing, hygiene items, just basic needs. So, we talked a little bit about poverty, and we're going to talk about homelessness. I think often we think they're the same thing, but they're very different. So, how would you define homelessness? I know all of you can do it.
Not having a home.
Not having a home. You know what, for that answer, I'm going to give you a mustard seed hat.
Thank you.
Everybody learn from this. That's how you get prizes. So, Jonah said not having a home, so that's absolutely correct. So we would define it as not having access to safe, stable, and secure housing. So a lot of the clients that we serve at the Mustard Seed, some of them don't have a home. Some of them do have a home, but it's not safe, stable, or secure. And so we would consider them experiencing homelessness. Even though they have a home, but because it's not safe, stable, or secure, it's not really a home. So homelessness takes different forms, and it looks different than that. There's different ways that people sleep when they experience homelessness. So the first is what's called living rough. So these are people sleeping in a car, on the street, or in a park. Obviously in Karenport, you're probably not going to see that. And maybe in some other small towns, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, you're probably not going to see a lot of people living rough. But if you go to Regina, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, Calgary, major cities, you'll often see people who are sleeping on the street, they're in a park, they're sleeping in areas that they think are good enough for them to sleep. Oftentimes in Calgary, you see people in storefronts sleeping. You see people in parks. There's this major park downtown Calgary called Central Memorial Park. I walk by all the time, and oftentimes I see people sleeping there. People experiencing homelessness at night in this park, and in the day you see children playing there. It's a really interesting thing to witness. So a lot of people are living rough. The other way that people sleep is, of course, a homeless shelter. So this is a place that provides food and a warm, safe place to sleep. And lastly, we have what's called temporary shelter. This includes couch surfing, staying at a hospital, or living in a hotel for a short while. There's a lot of people that are living in hospitals, and they actually don't have homes. And they're just being kept there. And the cost to keep them there is hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's actually crazy when you think about it. The price to keep people in hospitals or in prisons, it costs us a lot of money. And it's really interesting when you look at how all the services that we're providing and the ways that we're sheltering people outside of permanent housing, it costs a lot of money. So there's people couch surfing. A lot of people, we don't know that they're experiencing homelessness because they're couch surfing. They're going from house to house. They're staying at friends' houses. So these are all different ways that people sleep. There's different types of homelessness. So we have transitional homelessness. This is affecting a person that is going through a major life change or a catastrophic event. So maybe life was fine, and then something happened that caused them to experience homelessness out of their control. Second type is episodic homelessness. So this is a person who experiences at least 3 episodes of homelessness within 1 year. And then the third is chronic homelessness. This is homelessness that occurs for longer than a year. This is the most common form of homelessness, and majority of people experiencing homelessness are chronic. Okay, I'm going to ask another question. Why do you think people experience homelessness?
Capitalism.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Mistakes.
Yep. Health? Mental health, yeah. Yeah.
It's too risky to stay where they are.
Too risky to stay where you are, yeah. Any other thoughts? Spending their money poorly, yeah.
Unable to find, cheap enough for
someone. Yeah. Yeah, so rent is too expensive. Yeah, especially in big cities. Any other thoughts?
Drug addictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, drug addictions. Give me 2 more.
Trauma.
Trauma, yeah.
Can't find work.
Can't find work, yeah. So those are all great answers. I think it's really important when we talk about why people experience homelessness, that we realize how complex it is and that there's so many different reasons. And the reality is, we might not know why someone's experiencing homelessness. At the end of the day, in my opinion, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that we show love and we give generously, because that's what Jesus taught us. I think of many moments in the scriptures where the disciples asked Jesus, why, like the blind man, why is he blind? Was it because of something his parents did, or because of something he did? And Jesus is like, that doesn't matter. I'm going to glorify myself by healing this man. And I think that's just a beautiful picture of us not caring too much about why this person is in this situation, but us just wanting to show God's love, because they're a human being made in His image. So, homelessness is very complex. As we've heard from all the answers, there's many different reasons why someone might be in that situation. So on the left, we have relational factors. So we talked about traumatic events, so something like your house burning down, earthquake, natural disasters. Personal crisis, so maybe a family member dies, mental and physical illness, and addictions. I think often we immediately go to addictions for reasons why people are experiencing homelessness, and I'm guilty of this. Before I started working at the Mustard Seed, I just assumed everyone was there because of an addiction, and I think that's a common stereotype, that everyone on the streets is doing drugs, and they put themselves there, but it's not always the case. At the top, we have structural factors, so that includes poverty, lack of affordable housing, lack of health supports, discrimination. And on the right, we have systems failures, so inadequate discharge planning from hospitals, correctional facilities, mental health and addictions facilities. And then also new Canadians. So people who are new to Canada, they don't speak the language, they don't have family, supports, connections, and it's really hard for them to get integrated into a new society, a new culture. So a lot of the clients at the Mustard Seed, they're new Canadians, and some of them don't speak English, and they just don't know where to go to find help. I want to talk briefly about being discharged from these facilities. So think about someone who commits a crime. Let's say it is the year 2000. Was anyone born in 2000? No? Okay. I won't ask you when you were all born. Don't worry. So let's say someone commits a crime. They get sent to prison. And let's say it was kind of not a major crime, but just a crime, you know? They get sent to prison. Maybe they're in for 10, 15 years. And they get released. You can imagine how different the world would be after 10 or 15 years, especially the last 10, 20 years. A lot has changed. Internet, social media, the cost of living, all sorts of things have changed. And a lot of people, when they get released from prison, it's really hard for them to get back on their feet and to find a job. They don't have a home. Sometimes their family's moved away. Maybe they don't have any friends in the city. And a lot of our clients who come to us, they've recently been released, and there's really no help for them. And they're not set up for success once they leave prison. And some people might think, oh, well, they deserve that. But I think as Christians, our heart should always be redemption, restoration, regardless of who the person is. Because that's what God does for us. So, homelessness is very complex. If you hear anything I say today, just hear that. That homelessness is so complex. And I think this helps us to have compassion on everyone, regardless of their story, regardless of where they come from. We need to have compassion on them. So, I want you to guess, how many people in Calgary do you think are experiencing homelessness? I'll give you a hint, it's under 15,000.
14,000.
Lower.
12,000.
A bit lower.
9,000?
A little lower.
6,000?
Very close. So, this is the number we have. This was a count done a few years ago. They went around all the shelters, they went on the streets, and they tried to count how many people were experiencing homelessness. And the reality is, they're not able to find everyone. We talked about people who are couch surfing. There's the reality of hidden homelessness in every Canadian city. On any given night, there are way more people experiencing homelessness than we realize. So we think it's closer to around 7 or 6,000. But we really don't know. It could be a lot higher, and we just don't know. So on top of that, we have active encampments in Calgary. So these are places throughout the city where people are living outside. So we talked about living rough. These are people who are living rough, and we have around 187 active encampments. So these are people who are living outside throughout the winter, through all seasons, and a lot of them, they don't want to go to the shelter. It could be because they got kicked out, maybe they got suspended, maybe they just don't trust the shelter system, and so they choose to live outside. Ultimately, we can't force people to be housed, but we can try our best to make that available to them. So, I'm going to talk a little bit about the mustard seed. So the mustard seed started in 1984, and it started with a young man named Pat Nixon. Pat, when he was around 12 or 13, he had to leave his home because it wasn't safe. So it wasn't safe, stable, or secure. So Pat found himself out on the streets in Calgary as a really young teenager. And one day, Pat was asking for money, and as he's asking for money, a group of Christians come by, and they see this man, and instead of passing him by, instead of ignoring him, they stop, they ask him what his name was, they reach out to him, and they actually invite him to lunch that day. As they're hanging out, they're having lunch with this man, they're talking with him, and just through conversation, they actually invited Pat to come and live with them. And you might think that's crazy, and I also think it's crazy, just inviting this stranger to come and live with you. But this group of Christians, they believed so much in the love of Jesus that they saw this young man who didn't have a home, and they offered a home to him. I think that is a beautiful picture of God's love, even thinking about the scripture that we're talking about this weekend, about welcoming the prodigal home. That should be our posture in all things. And that's what Pat experienced as a 12-year-old. He was given a home. Shortly after that, he actually stole from them. He stole a stereo and a few other things. And it's funny hearing that story. Like, people stole stereos back in the day, but I feel like you don't really hear about that nowadays. So he stole a few things from them, ended up going to prison. A few months later, he was released, and he goes back to this house. He goes back to the place where he stole from, and he knocks on the door, and they open the door, and they say, "Pat, are you ready to come home?" And he says, "Yes," and they just say, "Welcome home." They didn't shame him. They didn't tell him to go away and never come back. Even though he broke that trust, they still believed in him, and they still wanted to give him a second chance. And once again, I think that's a beautiful picture of how God sees us and his heart towards us. So that's how the Mustard Seed started. It started with one man being given a home. And through that experience, Pat's life began to change. He actually became a pastor in his 20s. And he opened up his home once he got a home. He opened it up for people who didn't have a home. So that one act of kindness had a ripple effect in Pat's life. And eventually they started the Mustard Seed, started the shelter. And the Mustard Seed is in now 5 cities in Western Canada. So Edmonton, Red Deer, Medicine Hat, Kamloops, BC, and Calgary. And we're trying to set up in Prince Albert currently, Saskatchewan. But it's crazy to think that just one man was shown kindness. And now today we have 5 locations. We're housing hundreds and hundreds of people, feeding thousands of people, because one person was shown kindness. And I feel like that's a word for us, that we never know the impact that we'll have just by showing one person kindness. Obviously, the name the Mustard Seed is taken from the scriptures. If you're familiar with the parables that Jesus tells about having faith as a mustard seed, it's only in the 3 synoptic gospels, so Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's not in the Gospel of John. But Matthew and Mark and Luke, they tell it a bit differently. I think in Matthew, it talks about the parable, how the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed. It's the smallest of seeds, but when it's planted, after it grows, it's one of the largest trees. And it provides nest for the birds and shade for people. And that's kind of what the mustard seed has become. It started off really small, and it grew into something really big and beautiful. We're going to watch a quick video of a former client of the Mustard Seed. His name is Sean. And he's just going to share a bit of his story. And I think it's really valuable to hear real stories of people who experience homelessness, to listen and to learn from them. And so we're just going to take a few minutes and watch this video.
I'm trying my hardest to bring something positive into your thoughts. Because you know what? Then maybe you'll see it a little bit differently. Then maybe you'll be kind of like me and try to take the good from the bad. One of the toughest things for me to have to understand is how you can be so negative about yourself that you don't care about anything or anyone that directly interacts with you. You're doing more harm than good. You're not gonna help the situation. You're gonna bring more harm to it than good. Sorry, my eyes leaked again. You can do nothing but go forward with the positive energy. If it's negative, you're stuck in a rut. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's hard to get out of that rut. It was hard for me because my father passed away when I was 5 years old. So my mother had to raise two boys on her own. It was just after my hockey season. I was captain of the High River Juvenile Imperial Hockey Team. I was driving my motorbike to work. The town of High River's front end loader was going west, and it failed to make a safe left-hand turn. It drove right through me, right over top of me. I was in a coma for a month. I was in traction for 3.5 months. It took me a year and a half to learn how to walk again because of me coming so close to death that's made me appreciate the smaller things in life, appreciate the things that people just don't really pay any attention to, that they don't really care about. Even if you're not homeless, you have to have some form of interaction with other people. When I meet anybody, I go like this. And what I'm doing there is I'm saying from my heart, from my soul, I want peace. I'm not a bad guy. I'm a nice guy. I don't mean any harm. I just mean to help. I mean to be good. My name's Sean Kendall Victor Fowler, and right now, we're at the Mustard Seed. It's a homeless shelter, and these people have been extremely, extremely good to me and to anybody who's homeless. When I'm at the Mustard Seed, I help them volunteering, doing anything they need. And when I help them volunteering, I put 120% into it. Because what I'm doing is I'm saying thank you to them for giving me four walls, a roof, and something to eat. I feel blessed. Thank you.
I love hearing Sean's story because I think it kind of it corrects this view of people who experience homelessness that they're drug addicts, that they're unsafe people, maybe that they're not kind. And from my experience working at the Mustard Seed, we would encounter hundreds of people a day, and a lot of the people that we would interact with were very kind people. And I realized through working there, I'm like, oh, they're just people. And I think the society that we live in has kind of conditioned us to view people experiencing homelessness as less human. And we've just kind of ignored them. And I also love how Sean, he shared about his past. How his father died when he was really young, so he had that trauma and that pain, and then he got in that terrible accident. And so you never know why someone's in the situation they're in. There might be some deep, deep trauma that they're carrying. Maybe that's why they're addicted to meth or cocaine. It's hard to blame them for the situation they're in, especially when we find out the pain and the trauma they experienced when they were younger. So we never know why someone's in the situation they're in. So we're going to switch now and talk a little bit about the Mustard Seed. So as I mentioned earlier, we have a shelter. It's one of our main services. And we are a housing-focused shelter. So what that means is our goal is to house people. So we don't want to keep people in our shelter. We want to see them transition into permanent housing. So we have around 370 emergency shelter mats. This is what it looks like. They're just mats. Our shelter is in a warehouse. As you can see from this picture, this is not ideal for living. Being that close to people, sleeping on mats. And once again, our goal is not to keep people there. Our goal is to see them move into a permanent home. So we've served over 200,000 meals every year, and the average stay at the shelter is around 13 days. We have clients that come for a day or 2 days. We have clients that have been there for many years. And people can come and stay as long as they want or as short as they want. But once again, the shelter is not just a bed and a warm meal. We are providing a pathway out of homelessness. So one of the ways that we've done this is through our permanent housing facility. This past year, we supported around 700 people to move out of the shelter into a permanent home. This building is right downtown Calgary, right below the Calgary Tower. And it's actually one of Canada's largest permanent supported housing facilities. So we have around 274 housing units in this building and in this building right next door. And this is a permanent place for people to live. So they might leave the shelter or they might leave whatever situation they're in. Maybe they're out in the streets or they're in an apartment somewhere downtown Calgary. Wherever they are, they can come and they can come and live here. We don't discriminate against people based on what they believe or their situation. Our goal is to get people housed, and that's the most important thing. This is what one of the rooms looks like. It's pretty similar to the layout of a hotel room. One of our residents, Patricia, she talked about her life at the 1010 Center, that it's about belonging and it's about having an address. Something like having an address is so important to people who didn't have an address before. And we might not think about those things, but just think about that. You don't have an address. You don't have a place to call your own. You don't feel like you belong anywhere. So for people who leave the shelter and they find their home at the 1010 Center, it can take a lot to get used to. But we try our best to set them up for success and really foster a sense of community there as well. Right next door to the housing facility is our support center. So I actually used to work here. We offer bag lunches, hygiene items, clothing. This is where we accept donations. We also offer help with ID services. So if someone doesn't have government ID, if they don't have access to their birth certificate, we will help them get that. We also offer a mustard seed ID, and that will help people get things like bus passes and access other services in Calgary as well. We help with taxes. Basically, anything that people need help with, we'll help them with that. We also offer spiritual care. So like I said, we're a Christian organization. We have a chaplain who is on site at all times, and he's there if clients want prayer. He's available to pray with them. And ultimately, he's there just to talk to people. A lot of people who experience homelessness, they're really lonely, and they need someone just to talk to. We also offer security and crisis intervention. So our amazing staff, they are constantly walking around the property, because the area that we're located is in between two major alleyways in Calgary. And we just see a lot of people in those alleyways who are using drugs, a lot of people who are in distress and need assistance. And so our staff are walking around every 20 minutes just to make sure people are okay. Unfortunately, the staff at the support center always encounter people who are overdosing, and often we're the first people on the scene when someone's overdosing. So they carry naloxone with them. If you don't know, naloxone is something that you inject into someone who's overdosing, and it will basically stop that drug and the effects of that drug in their system. And hopefully they'll wake up once you administer naloxone. We offer lots of different services at our support center, and we're there to help people. Whatever help someone's looking for, we try to help them. Next door to that is our health and wellness center. So we don't just help with helping people find shelter or giving food, but we help with all the needs that someone has. We help with advocacy, counseling, physiotherapy, occupational therapy, foot care. We have doctors and nurses. You can imagine if someone's walking all day in shoes that don't fit them, or maybe they don't have shoes. You can imagine that your feet would probably hurt, especially in the winter months. Frostbite is a really bad thing to experience, and for a lot of people experiencing homelessness, they'll lose their fingers. Some people have lost toes, and so foot care is really important. We've helped over 300 people find jobs this past year, and like I said about our support center, the Health and Wellness Center, they help with all different needs. So if you're looking to find help with a job, if you need help with your finances, they'll help with that. This is a project that we have coming up that we're really excited about. This is a family housing unit. And the really cool thing about this is that the United Church in Ogden, they reached out to the Mustard Seed. They saw a need in their community, and they said, we want to make a space for housing for people that don't have a home. And so they reached out to us, and through lots of talks, we agreed that we were going to set up in this area. And they actually decided to have their church building completely demolished in order to make way for housing for people that don't have a home. And I just think that's a beautiful picture of what the church should look like in a community that they're set up in. When they see a need, that they're willing to give up their building to meet that need. So I just think that's really beautiful. And it should be finished around 2023. There's going to be a multi-purpose space, supportive services, educational resources, community kitchen, affordable childcare, and a cafe. And when it's completed, the church will have their service on the bottom floor. And it will be just a space for people to come. And there will be different services set up there, different programs for families and children. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about something called person-first language. Has anyone heard of person-first language? Anybody? No? Okay. So person-first language is something that we really try to use at the Mustard Seed. And I didn't use this language or even know about it before I started working at the Mustard Seed. So if you don't know, that's okay. And you've probably noticed I've tried to use this language throughout my seminar. So instead of referring to someone as a homeless person, we want to try to refer to them as a person experiencing homelessness. There's other ways that we can do this. But I think it's really important that we try to use this language. We might not think this, but when we refer to someone as a homeless person, it's somewhat dehumanizing them. We're seeing them as their situation. They are a homeless person. That's who they are in our minds. That's how we see them. And the reality is that's not who they are. They have a name. They're a person. They have a story. And especially as Christians, if we believe everyone's made in God's image, we should affirm that in them. And we should see them as made in His image, as people. And so we can do this by referring to someone as a person experiencing homelessness. I noticed when I started using this language that the way I saw people changed. The way I felt about them changed. It's a really simple way that we can make a difference. I really believe this makes a difference. I've seen this in real time make a difference. And so I encourage you, whether it's with your friends, your family, in your school, if you hear someone refer to someone as a homeless person, you can be like, hey, maybe let's use this language instead, and you can explain why that's important. We don't refer to each other as housed people. I see you as a person. I don't know your situation, but you're someone made in God's image, and you're worthy of that recognition. The reality is a lot of people experiencing homelessness, they don't feel seen, and they feel ignored, and they feel less human because of that. And so we want to try our best to humanize people. And this is a way that we can do that. Obviously, our language is constantly changing, but this is what we have for now. And I just encourage you to try to implement this. You might get it wrong at times, but in the long run, it's worth it. So, we're going to change gears here and talk about some of the scriptures, what the scriptures say in reference to people who are poor. I'm really passionate about this because I think God is really passionate about this. We see this throughout the scriptures that the way God sees people who are poor and needy is favorable. He actually has favor on those people. There's many scriptures that talk about God's heart towards the poor. And there's many scriptures that we see God actually rebuking these people because they're not caring for the poor. They're not caring for the people that are living in their midst. They're not showing justice. They're not showing mercy. And it all goes back to the character of Yahweh, of God. He is a gracious and compassionate God. He is a God of justice and mercy. And if his people aren't showing that to those around them, then they're not loving God. So, let's go through some scriptures that talk about poor and needy. So Psalm 9, verse 18. For the needy shall not always be forgotten, and the hope of the poor shall not perish forever. Psalm 34. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. Psalm 35. All my bones shall say, O Lord, who is like you, delivering the poor from him who is too strong for him, the poor and needy from him who robs him. As for me, I am poor and needy, but the Lord takes thought of me. For you are my help and my deliverer. Do not delay, O my God. For he delivers the needy when he calls, and the poor, and him who has no helper. I don't know if you've noticed, but the way that the Psalms refer to the poor and needy, it changes. So the psalmist refers to the poor and needy as someone who is literally poor. They don't have those basic needs. Maybe they don't have enough clothing. Maybe they don't have shelter. That same word, David uses to describe himself. He says, I am poor and needy. He recognizes that he is poor and needy. He actually identifies with those who are literally poor. And I think that's really important for us as Christians, that I think we're called to identify with the poor and needy. Go through some more here. I'm not going to read all of these, but 1 Samuel, he raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them he has set the world. Isaiah 41, when the poor and needy seek water and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I, the Lord, will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. We're probably really familiar with Matthew 5. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. If you're familiar with the Gospel of Luke, when he has his version of the Beatitudes, he says, blessed are the poor. Instead of poor in spirit, Luke just says poor. And once again, I think we're invited to see poor in spirit and poor in the same way. I think we're invited to identify with the poor and needy, because we are poor and needy. We all have a need that only God can meet. Obviously, people who are experiencing homelessness and poverty, they have an obvious need, maybe more obvious than us. Their need is seen more visibly than our need. But the reality is, we all have the same need before God. We are all called to rely on Him for all of our needs. This is a quote from a book called Sacred Fire that I really love. His name's Ronald Rollheiser. He says, the quality of your faith will be judged by the quality of justice in the land. And the quality of justice in the land will be judged how the weakest and most vulnerable groups in society, the orphans, widows, and strangers, fared while you were alive. Jesus inherited a religious tradition that emphasized outreach and actions to the poor as a non-negotiable demand within any true religious practice. The idea was that our standing with God depended not just on our private prayer and integrity, but also on how we stand with the poor. Indeed, the Jewish prophets made it clear that God favored the poor. I love this quote, because I think it really captures the heart of the Old Testament and how God views the poor. Someone want to shut that door?
Yeah.
That'd be great. Listen to what he says. The idea is that our standing with God depended not just on our private prayer and integrity, but also on how we stand with the poor. If we're not standing with the poor, if we're not caring for the poor, our private devotion to God, this might sound harsh, but it's kind of meaningless. Jesus talks about the greatest commandment is to love God and to love one another. You can't love God if you're not loving one another, and you can't love one another if you're not loving God. They come hand in hand. So I want you to just even think about those in your communities where you're from. Who are the most vulnerable? Maybe they might not be literally poor or experiencing homelessness, but maybe they're people that are seen as outcasts. Maybe they're ignored by society. Maybe God is inviting you to reach out to them, to care for them. We have a shared need, and we identify with the poor and needy. In 1 John, he says, "This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth." Notice how he says, if anyone has material possessions. So if any of you have material possessions, which all of us do, and if we see someone in need, but we don't give, we're invited, I think, by the scriptures to hear this word, to be generous, regardless of someone's situation. Because we have a shared need, we've been given so much by God. And we're called in return to give. Let's see what time it is. I want to just leave room for questions. We have about 10 minutes. Does anyone have questions or thoughts? Maybe if you learned something new, I'd love to hear. Great question. Thanks for asking that question. Yeah, I actually was going to share this story, but I forgot. So when I moved to Calgary, it was in June of 2020. Weird time to move, to pack up your life and move to a new city during the pandemic. But I knew God was calling me there, and I didn't have a job. But I knew that that He had a specific job for me. And so I actually waited for 2 months with no job, and the Lord provided for me in really amazing ways. And this one day I was walking, and I decided to donate some clothes to the Mustard Seed. It was in my neighborhood. And I go there, I drop off clothes, and something in my interaction with the staff there just kind of sparked something in me. And as I was walking home, I just had this sense from the Lord that it was time to apply. Like I just felt like He was allowing me to finally apply for a job, because I really felt like it was a no, like I wasn't supposed to apply anywhere, and that's not like a normal thing for me to feel. So I'm walking home, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna see if there's any job listings with the Mustard Seed. I go home, look online, and there's a job, and it's called street level staff, helping out at the support center, and I'm like, you know what? I'll try it out. Writing out my resume, writing out the application. And as I'm writing the application, a good friend who actually went to Briarcrest with me, she sends me a text. And in the text, she sent a sermon. She's like, hey, you should really listen to this. And the title of the sermon was called The Faith of a Mustard Seed. And I just really believed in that moment that God was saying, I'm in this, and this is the job that I have for you. As I was writing out my resume for the Mustard Seed, my friend sent me that sermon. So it was perfect timing, and I had a sense I would get the job. Sure enough, I got the job, and yeah, that's how I started there. Any other questions? I'll ask you guys a question. Do you, like, when you see someone, let's say you're in a big city, when you see someone experiencing homelessness, do you feel uncomfortable? Do you feel like you don't know what to do or say in those situations? You just give me a nod if you have felt that. I'm assuming all of us have felt that. I have felt that. I want to encourage you, when you find yourself in those situations, because you will, wherever you live, wherever life takes you, you're going to find people in those situations. I would just encourage you in those moments to see them as someone made in God's image. To try to teach yourself in that moment, this person is made in God's image. Remind yourself. And from that space, ask God, what does this person need? Maybe you can even ask them, what do you need? Oftentimes I think we assume the needs of people without even getting to know them. So when you're in that situation, try to humanize that person. Strike up a conversation with them. Get to know them. And I guarantee that they are a lot less scary than we think or feel in that moment. When we get to talk to them, we realize they're just a human being like us. So yeah. Any last thoughts before we finish?
So when they're in the 10-10 house, you said, it's a permanent residence, or do like you slowly upgrade them to like put them on their own, like in a job, and then get their own permanent house? And, like, how long do they usually stay in that building?
Yeah, so we have people that have been there since it opened in 2014. It is a permanent home, so we have people that have stayed there for a long time, but a lot of people do transition out of there, wanting to find their own place with no supports, because it is a place set up to support people. So we have wraparound supports. Our staff are constantly checking in on the residents. We have lots of residents with mobility issues. And so there is somewhat of a high turnover for people that go there. But we have almost, like, I think it's 90% success of people who, once they're there in the 1010 Center, they get their foot in the door, they get those supports, and then they leave to find their own apartment. And a lot of people experience success after that. So, yeah, we see residents leave there to find their own place, and a lot of people will stay as well. So. Okay, I'm going to give away a few more prizes. Does anyone remember the 5 cities that we're located in?
Calgary, Edmonton, Red Deer, Kamloops,
Deadtown. Yeah, well done. Do you want a water bottle or a hat?
I like a water bottle.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't give you a choice.
Thanks.
Okay, can anyone tell me what living rough is? Yes.
It's like camping, but in a park.
Okay. Well, that's a good answer. let me think. Can anyone give me a scripture of when Jesus speaks about the poor? Yeah.
So you got Matthew 5:3.
Can you quote it to me?
Oh, you're supposed to quote it?
Yeah.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom.
Nice, nice. Well done. Not much of this, yeah. Okay, let me think. I'm all out of questions. Oh, does anyone remember the number of people experiencing poverty in Calgary?
189,000.
What was that?
189,000.
Well done. Do you want a water bottle or a hat?
Water bottle.
Okay. Well, that will be it for prizes. If you guys want to talk to me, I have a booth. It's right by that big game that they're playing with the ball. I don't know what it's called.
Nine Square.
Nine Square. Wow, I feel... Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm right by that Nine Square, and if you want to talk, we have lots of different information set up. If you are interested in getting connected with the Mustard Seed, for volunteering, for maybe a job in the future. You can write down your email and we'll get in contact with you. And there's also a draw if you are interested in winning a free gift card of $50. You can enter into a draw. So come and find me. Thank you for joining me. I'm going to just end in prayer, if that's okay. And then you guys can head out. Jesus, I thank you for what you're doing this weekend. And I thank you for the reminder of the prodigal son that you have your arms open wide to welcome us home. And God, that's your posture towards every person. Whether they're experiencing homelessness or they have a home, you feel that way towards every person. Your arms are open wide, ready to welcome them home, not shame them for their actions, but to just welcome them back. And so, Jesus, I pray this weekend we would feel your embrace. And I pray everyone in this room would encounter you in a new way this weekend. Jesus, I thank you for what you're doing, and I just pray a blessing over our time together. Amen. Amen. Thank you for coming, and I hope you guys have a great weekend. Wonderful. Yeah, I wasn't really interested.